Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with Kavi and Benjamin, my space nerds extraordinaires. We're talking about the history of NASA and the names of these rockets and these missions and these rovers and satellites. They often have names that are also based in Greek mythology, and I'm going to share a story of why I wanted to do this episode. It actually is rooted in my real life. And if he's listening to this, thank you, Brian. I was diving this past weekend and I met someone new for the first time, and he works in the space industry, and his son's name is Apollo. And so he says, like, oh, my wife says, like, pick up Apollo. And I was like, wait, beep, beep, time out. I was like, is this a pet, or, you know? And he's like, no, this is my son's name. And I was like, huh. And in passing, Brian was like, man, you really dropped the ball on not naming your daughter Delphi. And it just like whoop went over my head. I didn't know what he was talking about. So the next morning he calls me and he's like, you don't know what I was referencing, do you? And I was like, I guess I don't. He's like, you've never heard of the Delphi method? And I'm like, nope, that one I might not. Do you not know either?
No, I was just trying to make a Jason. Do you not know the Delphi method? And I'm like, oh yeah, I hear about it every day at the Super
Bowl. Yeah, right. I know, right? Like, who? Okay. And so, not also, a good by joke. The way,
poorly timed. I'm sorry.
This totally man is like, he is a wealth of obscure knowledge, and so he's but he'll also be like, how do you not know this? And I'm like, who does know this? Like, just randomly, like the Delphi method, blah blah blah. So then we went on a like about an hour conversation about this, and this is why we're a match made in heaven. So anyway. The Delphi method, though, is, you know, basically a thought process, if you will, where, say, to use his example, say, like, we're going to grow a plant on Mars. They'll pool together everyone that has some sort of level of expertise on that. And then they think about, like, how feasible is this and what would we need to do? And basically, they apply the scientific method with their own individual things. But that Delphi in Greek mythology was an oracle. She was someone who predicted the future. And so I was like, oh, the meaning, the nuance behind that is so beautiful. Kavi shared with us something, a really cool fact. Can you share that? The thing you shared in that chat?
Oh, the thing about Delphi?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to be in Delphi, in Greece this time last year. We went with my wife for anniversary, and it's incredible that, like, it's this tiny thing on a mountaintop, like 3-4 hours drive out of Athens, where back in the day, dignitaries and, you know, all of the people who are high up in ancient Greek society, used to come up to this mountain. So it probably would have taken like days for them to do the trek up there to hear the oracle, right? To get the oracle's advice. And what's crazy is that the oracle and all of the nuns, like all young women who lived there, would actually save and kind of catalog all the information they would get from all the visiting dignitaries, and they would chisel it into the stone. So when you go to Delphi and you see the remains of the buildings there, the majority of the bricks, these like giant, you know, meter by meter bricks, have little Greek letters carved into every inch of them. It's kind of like Wikipedia, but like set in stone, literally. And it's kind of like it added to the mystery and this kind of like mystical nature of Delphi, of like, you're going to see the oracle in this middle of nowhere place on the top of a mountain. How does she know about, you know, the drama happening between the king and queen of some like Mycenaean, you know, Greek island in the middle of nowhere? It's because they're writing down everything that they were hearing from the other people. Anyway, super fascinating place. If you ever make it to Greece, highly recommend going
super
to Delphi.
Super fascinating. I know. And I just thought that that's such a, you know, such a cool thing that they obviously cherished, which was documenting knowledge and just information. And so I think it's very fitting that our space programs then decided to use names of these people and what was important to them for our space programs for this adventure into the stars. And also, of course, you know, we still call all the planets and, you know, constellations after these civilizations. So I think that there's also a logical kind of reason to do that as well, because when I did some digging around on this, there really isn't a concrete point where someone was like, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to name everything going forward. It was just a hold on, let me find it. His name, Abe Silverstein.
Abe Silverstein.
Yeah. Silverstein. Excuse me.
It might be Stein. I'm actually not sure.
It is Stein, yeah. If you're saying it like the German pronunciation. But anyway, so there's actually a conflicting story. He said that maybe it was because, you know, the name of gods in ancient Greek mythology with attraction connotations, you know, basically would catch the public's interest. Like, there's a story that says that that's his logic, is that he was like, oh, the, you know, like, this is what's going to capture America's interest and attention, because at that time, obviously, we were in a very heated space race against the Russians. But then there's also another story that's like, no, he just kind of was like, oh, I thought it was cool. You know, like, that there wasn't that much thought. So I don't know.
I had heard that Abe had actually, and I mean, Abe was one of like the really important engineers in the, not just the early days of NASA, but the early days of the NACA, which was the preceding, I think I got the acronym right, preceding organization before NASA. And what I had heard was that he'd suggested like both Mercury and Apollo for the mythical connotations, that, you know, Mercury was this messenger to the god with winged feet. And so it made sense, like, you know, winged feet flying across the sky. And then Apollo as well. It's like, you know, Apollo in his chariot flying across the sun, which I guess was something that NASA was trying to not do in terms of like launching rockets at the sun. But
not a good idea, but
best not. But I think also, like, at the time, all of the rockets, so like the Saturn, I was looking into this and it was kind of like one of those magical handkerchiefs that you keep pulling on and you keep finding like just more and more, like, right. It's like, why was that named after a Greek thing? Well, I think it was because, you know, Saturn V was named that way as well. And they're like, well, wait, why was Saturn V named that? Well, it was because of the previous Saturn missions, and the Saturn missions were named after the Jupiter missions, and the Jupiter missions were named after the Atlas missions. You know, all of these ancient names, which at a certain point, you're dating back to like naming for intercontinental ballistic missiles that were designed by Wernher von Braun in the 50s, in the, you know, the start of the Cold War. So I think they're all tied into that somehow.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's a lot of connection. And also what I had read as well was, yes, like even choosing the name astronaut was done very intentionally because of the, like, what the Russians were doing and how they were naming, you know, their what we know now as cosmonauts. But, you know, everything was done with some consideration of that time. And I think that that's such a unique thing to always remember about the birth of NASA, that they, you know, I think there was a good chunk of time where they tried to kind of almost sweep a lot of that under the rug and just kind of didn't want to fully acknowledge how much the Cold War had fueled it. But it really is a part of that history. And so I think it's important to remember that and to see it in parallel to what is happening today. So anyway, Benjamin, I don't want to leave you out because I feel like we're gibbering and jabbering, but you also were talking about, when we were plotting out this show, all the other types of names that have been chosen for different things, like the Beatles, right?
Yeah. There are, I mean, you could go out there and name everything after Greek and Roman gods, but there are so many things out there, even though there's a lot of Greek gods and a lot of Roman gods and a lot of Norse gods, that you're going to run out of them immediately because there are so many things out there. So everything has funny little alphanumeric names, but once in a while, something of great, you know, popularity gets its name cemented in space. So there's four asteroids in our asteroid belt of similar size all in a row. So they're John, Paul, George, and Ringo. David Bowie passed. I think within a year of his passing, they named a constellation after him. It's a kind of shaped like a little lightning bolt that goes across his face from his Z Stardust days.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there are other new names that go in there. A lot of Shakespeare characters.
Yes.
Have all the moons of Uranus.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of other cool things. In the 1960s, NASA set up a naming committee to set forth some rules of how they're going to name missions. Didn't mention anything about naming them after mythology or rock bands or anything like that. But the rules were the name has to be easy to say, and the name can't sound like any other name that we give a name to a mission to, so they're easy to distinguish. And if possible, try to work the purpose of the mission into the name. So, like, the first satellite was Explorer because it's exploring, that kind of thing. So there were some three basic little rules that they came up with.
The three rules written in stone, if you will.
Back in the 1960s.
I also knew that there are rules in place for Venus, and that everything geographical on that planet has to be a female name because of the female identity that that planet holds.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so every like crater or mountain or anything, it has to have a feminine name. So that was like a rule set in place by who? I don't know. Like, is this like the mythical mythical librarian who will come after you for an overdue book, like in Seinfeld or something like that? Like, who's the enforcer of the name rules? there's got to be, I guess it's a reverence thing, right? It's a reverence to the history of that. And speaking of history, also in researching for this episode, I had seen in an article a book listed, and I was like, published in 1975. That doesn't sound, you know, probably that interesting. But then I actually found the book, a PDF copy of all of it, and I just shot the link to you guys before we hit record here. And even the cover, you're kind of like, oh my gosh, it's like so 1960s NASA glory. It really actually like 10 out of 10. I kind of want to go find a hard copy of this now and add it to my library, because you scroll 13 pages in and it's got a picture of Goddard with the world's first liquid propellant rocket. And I mean, it looks like it's not even as tall as him. Yeah. It's so cool. So anyway, the book is called Origins of NASA's Names. So, it only goes up to 1975, but it's really cool. If you're really into history, and it does give a lot of background into like what you were saying, choosing, you know, Juno or Thor, and then they show pictures from the Library of Congress of those gods and goddesses and like what the connection was and why they chose that particular god or goddess for rockets, and they have satellites and different mission projects. It's, you know, actually thinking this out too, man, there are so many names too. Like, think of SLS alone. You know, we have the Space Launch System. It's part of the Artemis program with the Orion capsule. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many names. And I guess I can't really believe that they really can enforce that the names can't be too similar in sound at this rate. You know what I mean?
A lot of them do, because NASA is just, they just love acronyms. And so they have lots of cool acronyms that almost spell words that explain what the mission do, if you know what the acronym stands for, but most people don't. So a lot of missions just have these really cool acronym names, and they kind of all just blend together as, you know, these are the another acronym mission.
I think ultimately too, they're just like, what would look really cool on a patch?
Yes.
That sounds good.
some of them are actually really cool. Like the WISE mission.
Yes.
The WISE mission is like, you think, oh, it's the WISE mission, like learning about the universe. Like I think it's the Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer, like the satellite taking, you know, scanning the entire sky in infrared. And then the mission was basically, you know, dead after 2 years, and they rejiggered the whole mission, redesigned it, and called it NeoWISE, which I thought, oh, that's Latin, like NeoWISE, the new WISE. And then I found out that NEOWISE was just because it's NEO, it's like near Earth orbit, like they're looking for near Earth orbit asteroids. Some of the acronyms are pretty cool. Honestly, yeah, in astronomy, we love acronyms.
Yeah, I think that's a science thing in general. And side note, whenever I see that, I'm always like, meowsy. That's what I think when I see that word, meowsy.
Okay, we're going to need to take now on meowsy.
Meowsy. We're going to take a quick break. Copy's dying now. We're going to take a break. We'll finish up talking about names and history and NASA and Greek mythology and all that fun stuff in the next segment, however that flows and comes out. So you're listening to this Space Case Sarah show with the space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio.